مجنت من النسيا زنا زنا سلكيا سمنتان زينة تسمعي سري غربي نمها سري تيتانيا منوبستام ستبيتام زينة بوتالي سيام روبا كدامي هم دتاتي سابدانتكم Vanshakapaturubhyascha kripasindhu vaivacha paditaram bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah. Beginning of chapter 20 of the fourth canto, Lord Vishnu's appearance in the sacrificial arena of Maharaj Prithu. We just heard how Prithu Maharaj had performed how many Asvamedha Yagyas? 99. And his 100th was stopped by whom? Who stopped the 100th? Indra, right. By stealing away the horsemen for the sacrifice. So, despite that, and Brahma of course came and told Prithu Maharaj to desist, stop with just having 99 sacrifices, and that way avoid the introduction of irreligion by Indra. So in one sense, Prithu Maharaj's performances of sacrifice was unsuccessful, because his desire was to perform 100 and he performed just 99. But actually, it was very successful. Why? And we hear that in the first verse, as Maitreya continued to narrate this pastime to Vidura. My dear Vidura, being very much satisfied by the performance of 99 horse sacrifices, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, appeared on the scene. Because ultimately, the purpose of all sacrifice, when you talk about sacrifice, it means sacrifice to someone, for someone. I'm making this great sacrifice for you. I've sacrificed so much for you. So there's always an object of the sacrifice. And the object of all sacrifice is to please Krishna, Vishnu, Yajnavai Vishnu. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, was so pleased with Prithu Maharaj. It did not matter to him that he only had performed 99 sacrifices. So he appeared on the scene. Accompanying him was King Indra. Lord Vishnu then began to speak. My dear King Prithu, Indra, the King of Heaven, has disturbed your execution of 100 sacrifices. Now, he has come with me to be forgiven by you. Therefore, excuse him. O King, the Lord continued, one who is advanced in intelligence and eager to perform welfare activities for others is considered best amongst human beings. An advanced human being is never malicious to others. He never wishes ill for others. Those with advanced intelligence are always conscious that this material body is different from the soul. So now, the Lord, from here until in the late teens, this is quite a few verses, Lord Vishnu is going to instruct Prithu Maharaj on knowledge. What kind of knowledge? It's going to be quite progressive. The first part of the knowledge, he's going to explain how, just as Krishna explains first in the Bhagavad Gita, Sochananda Sochastvam Pragyavaram Shabashase, that you're not the body. This is the basis, the most basic knowledge. We are not the body, that we are eternal souls. And based on that, Prithu Maharaj, the Lord, Lord Vishnu, in these verses is going to speak, practically speaking, an entire short Bhagavad Gita. He will build upon that knowledge and come to his conclusion. So here, he's giving Prithu Maharaj some instructions, beginning with the body. Material body is different from the soul. And he's using this as reason for Prithu Maharaj to forgive Indra, who's actually done something completely out of envy. And maliciousness and jealousy. He's succeeded in stopping the 100th sacrifice because he didn't want Indra's success to block his own greatness. He didn't want Prithu Maharaj's success to block his own greatness. So he's done a horrible thing in one sense for Prithu Maharaj, and the Lord is asking him to forgive. And he's saying that, after all, he stopped you from doing something. But if you understand that you are not your body, you are a soul, that will change your viewpoint. And not only that, Indra is not his body, he's a soul. So if he's a soul, an eternal soul, who has an eternal relationship with Krishna, why did he do such a horrible thing? Why did he stop me? So Prabhupada addresses that question in the purport. In daily life, we find that when a madman commits murder, he is excused even by a high court judge. He excuses him, I'm using the plea of insanity or even temporary insanity, madness. The idea is that a living entity is always pure because he is part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When he falls into the clutches of material energy, he becomes a victim of the three modes of material nature, the clutches of the material energy, victimized by the three modes of material nature. Indeed, Prabhupada continues, whatever he does so under the influence of material nature. So Prabhupada is explaining, continuing Lord Vishnu's idea, that Indra has done this deed in envy, but that envy was madness caused by him being completely influenced of the modes of nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. So why blame him? The soul is pure. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, what the saying in the Bible is, and Prabhupada would quote this, or quoted it, hate the sin. Yes. Not the sinner. Is that in the Bible? Hate the sin. In other words, there's something that someone does something wrong, and it's still wrong, it's improper, it's sinful, it's horrible. But the person shouldn't be hated, because he is simply under the influence of the modes. It has forced him. Baladevini Ojita engages someone by force. So the Bhagavad Gita explains, 5th chapter, 14th verse, Nakarchitam nakarmani lokasya sri jati prabho nakarma phalasam yogam svabhavas tu pravartite. The embodied spirit, master of the city of his body, he does not create activities. Now, these instructions that he has been given, or the Lord is giving to Prithu Maharaj, they are not the highest level instructions. They are not like the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. They're talking about detachment and dutiful work and things like that. But they're very, very practical instructions. So what we should do, Hare Krishna, is listen very carefully, thinking how we should apply these instructions to our lives. We think about people that we have anger towards, desires that we may have that are not fulfilled, or whatever. But think about these instructions and think practically, were I to apply this to my life, how would that change? So the verse says again, the embodied spirit, master of the city of his body, master of the city of the body, He does not create activities, nor does he induce people to act, nor does he create the fruits of action. All this is enacted by the modes of material nature. Actually, the living entity or soul does not do anything. Everything is done under the influence of the modes of material nature. When a man is diseased, the symptoms of the disease become a source of all kinds of pain. Those who are advanced in transcendental consciousness or Krishna consciousness are never envious, neither of the soul nor of the activities of the soul under the influence of material nature. Advanced transcendentalists are called sudhiyas. Sudhi means intelligence, and sudhi means highly advanced, and sudhi means devotee. One who is both devoted and highly advanced in intelligence does not take action against the soul or the body. Because someone can say, okay, the soul has not done it. I accept the philosophy, so the body has done this to me, so I'll just attack the body. And I won't touch the soul. After this, all the soul is eternal, it is indivisible, it cannot be killed. So I'll leave the soul alone and just kill the body. But no, a wise person, an intelligent person, sudhi, he does not retaliate in any way against either the soul or the body. If there's any discrepancy, he forgives. It is said that forgiveness is a quality of those who are advancing in spiritual knowledge. A very important concept. To forgive frees us. If we don't forgive, if someone does something to us and we don't forgive, we are caught by the very action that has upset us. We are caught by that action, and we will be forced to do something in retaliation at some point, either in this life or another life. We will be forced to get even if the sanskara or the impression has been made in our consciousness and it is not removed by forgiveness. Then we are entangled in the very action that has hurt us, and we will be forced to hurt someone else in the future. So therefore, forgiveness is the jewel that decorates the Brahman or the Vaishnava. But it is not easy. But this is the instruction to Prithumaraj, to forgive. Forgive Indra. The modes have done it. It has forced him into an envious mood. Text 4. If a personality like you, who are so much advanced because of executing the instructions of the previous acharyas, is carried away by the influence of material nature, then all your advancement may be considered a waste of time. In other words, to know something intellectually, to be advanced in knowledge without the practical application of that knowledge is useless. So therefore you have this knowledge, Prithumaraj, therefore you forgive. Those who are in full knowledge, so now he's going to change the point of view, the philosophical point of view. He said you forgive because he's a soul, and these acts are carried out by the material nature, the material energy. But also understand, what did he do that was horrendous? He stopped the sacrifice that you're performing. What is the purpose of that sacrifice? For some material elevation, to set an example. But listen, those who are in full knowledge of the bodily conception of life, who know that this body is composed of nescience, ignorance, desires and activities, that the body is composed of all these things resulting from illusion, they do not become addicted to the body. So he's explaining that if you're upset that he's done something to you, it is an attachment to your body. Another illusion. Prabhupada explains about it halfway through the purport, on a third of the way. Whatever we desire or perform under the bodily conception is all illusion. In other words, Lord Vishnu informed Prithu Maharaj that although the sacrificial performance set an example for ordinary people, there was no need for such sacrificial performance as far as his personal self was concerned. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, 245, Tragunya Vishayaveda Nistragunya Bhavarjana Nirdvanva Nityasatvosto Niryoga Chema Atmavan. The Vedas mainly deal with the subject of the three modes of material nature. Rise above those modes. These modes, O Arjuna. Be transcendental to all of them. Be free from all duality and free from all anxiety for gain and safety, and be established in the Self. The ritualistic performances recommended in the Vedas mainly depend on the three modes of material nature. Consequently, Arjuna was advised to transcend these the Vedic activities. So don't worry. After all, the Lord explains, I am pleased. The purpose of the sacrifice ultimately is to please me. And here I am saying I am pleased with you. So don't worry. There is no other need for you to perform the sacrifice. You are transcendental, actually, to these sacrifices. So the Lord continues. So he's explaining things again based on us being eternal souls, not the body, that we are temporarily encaged and trapped and entwined and tangled within our bodies. But we are eternal while the body is temporary. That realization, if we deeply understood that, how it would change our life and how we used our time and what we became angry at and what we became pleased at. If we had that one realization deeply, the ABC realization. So he continues. How can a person, a highly learned person, who has absolutely no affinity for the bodily conception of life, be affected by the bodily conception in regard to house, children, wealth, and similar other bodily productions? Because the sacrifice is meant for material comfort. So why this Vedic sacrifice you're performing, so don't be upset on that ground either. So instead of thinking about what you will attain and what you missed out by performing the sacrifice, missed out upon attaining, what should you focus your mind on? It continues in text 7. The individual soul is one, pure, non-material, and self-effulgent. He is the reservoir of all good qualities. Don't place your mind on the temporary. The house, the body, and everything connected to the body. Don't focus your mind on that, but rather focus on the individual soul. Now, who is this individual soul that the Lord is saying to focus on? He is non-material. He is self-effulgent. He is the reservoir of all good qualities, and he is all-pervading. Not actually the individual jiva soul, the conditioned soul, but on the Paramatma. He is without material covering, and he is the witness of all activities. Upadrashtano mantacha bharta bhukta maheshwara paramatmekti chapyukto dehismin purusha para. He is the witness, the upadrashta. He sees everything. He is completely distinguished from other living entities, and he is transcendental to all embodied souls and transcendental to all free souls. He is the Paramatma. Paramatma. Read some of Prabhupada's purport, beginning with his quoting a comment of Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. According to Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, in this verse, Lord Vishnu is describing himself, or the Parama Atma. Parama means supreme or transcendental, supreme Atma soul. The Parama Atma is always distinguished from the embodied soul as well as the material world. He is not material, nor is he an individual like we are individuals, tiny. He is vibhu, he is powerful. Therefore, he has been described as Para. That Para, or Supreme Personality of Godhead, is Eka, meaning one. The Lord is one, whereas the conditioned souls embodied within the material world exist in many varieties of forms. There are demigods, human beings, animals, trees, birds, bees, and so forth. Thus, the living entities are not eka, but many. As confirmed in the Vedas, nityo nityanam, chaitanas chaitanananam, the living entities, who are many, and who are entangled in this material world, are not pure. However, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is pure and detached. Due to being covered by the material body, the living entities are not self-effulgent, but the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Paramatma, is self-effulgent. So Prabhupada goes on to prove how this... So the instruction that he's giving Prithumaraj is, don't think of your pleasure, your own pleasure. And although you're a soul, don't focus your mind simply on that, on the fact that you're an eternal soul, but rather focus your consciousness on the Paramatma, on the Lord. Be devoted. Be devoted. Your thoughts should be devotional, and you should focus your consciousness on the Paramatma and his service. That's text 8. Although within the material nature, one who is thus situated in full knowledge of the Paramatma, who is focusing his consciousness on the Lord and the Atman, knowing that he's an eternal soul, such a person is never affected by the modes of material nature. For he is always situated in my transcendental loving service. So this is actually the key to being in the material world, because we are in the material world, but actually being not of the material world, being free from the influences of the material world. And that key is to focus one's consciousness on the Lord in devotion. Mam chayo vivacharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan. The modes of material nature samatityaitan. He transcends the modes of material nature and comes to the brahmabhuyaya kalpati, the platform of spiritual. By continuously focusing his mind on the Lord. And this is the instruction. And then one transcends, as the Lord is transcendent, one also transcends. So how does a person who is focused on the Lord, how does he act? Because after all, he is in the material world, although his consciousness is focused on the Lord. So this is the practical application of the philosophy that the Lord is giving here to Prithumaraj, because Prithumaraj is a king. Text 9 answers that. But Vishnu continued, "My dear Prithu, when one is situated in his occupational duty, engages in my loving service, vajate sanakastasya manorajan prasiddhati." So one situated in his occupational duty, we all have so many duties to perform. Everyone has duties. So one performing his duties in my loving service, in the bhajate, with devotion, worshipping, serving with devotion, without motive for material gain, just doing this service for the pleasure of Krishna, he gradually becomes very satisfied within, because he's satisfying Krishna by his work. Yayatma supasidati. He becomes satisfied because his devotion has satisfied Krishna. So he becomes satisfied, just like the leaves of the tree become satisfied when the root is watered. Prabhupada explains one third way of the way down the purport. Some practical instructions. Everyone is situated in his occupational duty. But the purpose of material occupations should not be material gain. Rather, everyone should offer the results of his occupational activities. A brahmana especially should execute his occupational duties not for material gain, but to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The kshatriya, vaishya, and sudra should work in a similar way. In the material world, everyone is engaged in various professions and occupational duties. Everyone has something that they're doing. But the purpose of such activities should be to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Devotional service is very simple, and anyone can adopt it. Let one remain what he is. He need only install the deity of the Supreme Lord in his house. The deity may be Radha and Krishna or Lakshmi Narayan. There are many other forms of the Lord. In this way, a brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, sudra can worship the deity with the results of his honest labor. Regardless of one's occupational duty, one should adopt the devotional means of hearing, chanting, remembering, worshiping, offering everything to the Lord, and engaging in his service. In this way, one can very easily engage himself in the service of the Lord. When the Lord is pleased with one's service, one's mission in life is fulfilled. That's the answer to the question of what is the purpose of my existence? What is the purpose of my life? People forget to even ask this question. We just go on living, trying to protect ourselves and those dear to us, not thinking what is the purpose. But here, the purpose, Prabhupada explains it so clearly, is to somehow please the Lord, please Krishna. That is the purpose of human life. When the heart is cleansed of all material contamination, so when the heart is purified by such focusing of the mind on the Lord and service, the devotee's mind becomes broader and transparent. Right now our consciousness is contracted. Our affection is contracted. Everything is selfishly contained, and it is actually the cause of misery for us because it's so unnatural. So the devotee's mind becomes broader and transparent, clear, pure, and he can see things equally. He is not attached to his selfish activities. At that stage of life, there is peace, and one is situated equally with me as Satchitananda Vigraha. We are eternal, blissful, and full of knowledge as the Lord is. But we don't become the Lord. We remain as his servants. But we become on that platform, the spiritual platform. Anyone who knows, so this is the liberation, the freedom that everyone is longing for, the freedom from the ropes, the bindings of the material world, that everyone struggles against. So when one is liberated or freed through this process of performing one's occupational natural duties, not moving from that, but performing them for the pleasure of Krishna, then what? Well, he's freed from material bondage. What does he realize? Text 11. Anyone who knows that this material body, made of the five gross elements, the sense organs, the working senses, and the mind, is simply supervised by the fixed soul, is eligible to be liberated from material bondage. He'll see that the soul is completely different. Like that verse in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that the soul is completely different from the body. And seeing that he is working the body, he is fixed. The word is kutostam. The soul is fixed and steady, eternal. But he's working the body, and that working body is always working and always changing. And if one sees that, the fixed soul is different from the changing body, and the body is always changing, he's not disturbed because he's not disturbed because he knows he's different from all the things that are moving and changing. He knows he's fixed. He's unchangeable, the eternal soul. So the trick is somehow or another to become fixed in this realization. But the Lord now describes how this material world is always changing. And this is the puzzle of our material existence, why it is so disconcerting. Is because we are eternal and we long for that eternal atmosphere, a non-changing atmosphere. But yet, this eternal soul is within a continuously changing atmosphere. And that continuously changing atmosphere, he's identifying with it. He's thinking that he is changing as he tries to grasp one thing or another, holding on to it for his pleasure. To no avail, though. Because we grab it and we're always fearful that it will slip somehow out of our grasp. And it always does, ultimately by death. We cannot hold on to anything, whatever it is that we're attached to. Think of something that you're attached to, that I'm attached to. Whether it's the car, the family, it's the bank balance, the whatever, the position. Sometimes you see, and I did it when I was a kid too, you have become attached to your jeans, right? And have you don't know what that means. You don't have a pair of jeans, Shamari. But you see that the kids have that, and they have big holes in them, and they're still wearing them around. Like they have huge holes, and they're ripped because they're so attached to them, and it's falling apart right before their eyes. And then when it gets, then the one leg falls off, then they rip the other leg, and they make them into shorts or something like that. But it's always changing. So therefore, to be the eternal, it's very disconcerting for the soul. My dear King, Prithviraj, the constant change of this material world is due, this is the cause of it, to the interaction of the three modes of material nature. The five elements, the senses, so this is the cause of the flux of the material world, the material nature pushes it continuously. The five elements, the senses, the demigods who control the senses, as well as the mind, which is agitated by the spirit soul, all these taken together comprise the body. So, the material world, including the body, is always changing. And Prithviraj has been instructed by the Lord to be indifferent to it. So how is it possible to be indifferent to something that we're within and so attached to and working within and so intimately with? So in the second half of the verse, the Lord explains, since the spirit soul is completely different from this combination of gross and subtle material elements, my devotee who is connected with me in intense friendship and affection, being completely in knowledge, is never agitated by material happiness and distress. So here is the key. It's one thing to know theoretically that we're eternal souls and we're not our body. How many times have we heard it? How many times have we said it? But what brings the indifference to the changing body? Knowledge plus intense friendship and affection for the Lord. Intense love, in other words. The knowledge is one thing required, but deep, intense love for Krishna. Without that priti, the knowledge is dry and remains on the intellectual platform, and it doesn't practically make us indifferent from the material world. But when the knowledge is combined with deep love for Krishna, affection, intense friendship and affection, then the soul is never agitated by material happiness and distress. Prabhupada explains in the last line, I will read from the beginning of the purport and then skip to the end. The question may be raised that if a living entity has to act as the superintendent of the activities of the bodily combination, then how could he be indifferent to the activities of the body, even if he has that knowledge? How can he be indifferent if he's superintending, if he's controlling the body? How can he be indifferent to it? The answer is given here. These activities are completely different from the activities of the spirit soul of the living entity. A crude example can be given in this connection. A businessman riding in a motor car sits in the car, supervises its running, and advises the driver. He knows how much gasoline is used up, and he knows everything about the car. But still he is apart from the car and is more concerned with his business. If he has love, he's really into, in an affectionate way, intense friendship with his business or someone else, the car is just a vehicle. It doesn't become the source of his life and his pleasure, and he's detached from it. He uses it, he's aware of everything, he maintains it. But if he doesn't have the love and affection, he'll get completely entangled. And the car becomes everything for him. That happens. So as the businessman, he has no connection with the car, though he is sitting there. As the businessman is always absorbed in thoughts of his business, so the living entity can be absorbed in thoughts of rendering loving service to the Lord. Then it will be possible to remain separate from the activities of the material body. This position of neutrality can be possible only for a devotee. And the last sentence. Therefore, to remain always aloof from the actions and reactions of the body and engage in one's real occupation, namely rendering service to the Lord, can be possible only for the devotees. So therefore, do this. Do your duty, O King. Go about your business, your occupational duty. You are the king, and what is your business, your occupational duty that I'm asking you to do with intense affection and intense friendship for me as an offering to me? Oh Lord, be pleased by this. You've given me this duty. Now you please be pleased by how I'm doing it for your pleasure. What is your business as the king? Text 13. My dear heroic king, the Lord says, please keep yourself always equipoised and treat people equally. Whether they are greater than you in the intermediate stage or lower than you, do not be disturbed by temporary distress or happiness. Fully control your mind and senses in this transcendental position. Try to execute your duty as king in whatever condition of life you may be posted in by my arrangement. For your only duty here is to give protection to the citizens of your kingdom. So go about your real duty. Don't be upset with Indra. And do it as a devotional offering to you. Maybe we can come back and read this. To give protection to the general mass of people. More on the king's duties. Who are citizens of the state is the prescribed occupational duty for a king. By acting in that way, the king in his next life shares 1/6 of the head of the results of the pious activities of the citizens. So it's in the king or the executive leader's welfare, his own welfare, to make sure that the citizens engage in pious as opposed to sinful activities. He gains from that. He gets 1/6, the ruler gets 1/6 of the piety that the citizens perform. But a king or executive head of state who simply collects taxes from the citizens, but does not give them proper protection as human beings, has the results of his own pious activities taken away by the citizens. And in exchange for not giving protection, he becomes liable to punishment for the impious activities of his subjects. And you see this. When you see the face of a modern politician when he's taking office, and then you look at it 3 or 4 or 7 years later, 8 years later, and you see how much he has aged, his piety taken away, because he's absorbing the impious activities of the citizens. these two purports of Prabhupada's are quite long and quite important as to the duty of the king. He's saying, do that. And what will be the result of your dutiful action and devotion? My dear King Prithu, if you continue to protect the citizens according to the instructions of the learned Brahmana authorities, as they are received by the disciplic succession by hearing from master to disciple, and if you follow the religious principles laid down by them without attachment to ideas manufactured by mental concoction, that every one of your citizens will be happy and will love you, and very soon you'll be able to see such already liberated personalities as the four Kumaras, Sanak, Sanatan, Sananda, Sanat Kumar, so that he will actually see them later on. My dear King, text 16. I am very captivated by your elevated qualities and excellent behavior, and thus I am very favorably inclined toward you. You may therefore ask me, you can ask from me any benediction you like. So the Lord is actually saying that to Prithu Maharaj. You please ask me anything you want. I'm so pleased with you and I will award it to you. I will benedict you. One who does not possess elevated qualities and behavior cannot possibly achieve my favor simply by performance of sacrifices, severe austerities, or mystic yoga. But I always remain equipoised in the heart of one who is also equipoised in all circumstances. So Krishna is saying that if for one whose consciousness is fully focused upon me, regardless of what's going on, externally, if he's just focused on me, if he has so much strength and devotion, focusing on me means, Krishna is saying, focusing on pleasing me. If he is such a high quality devotee, I will remain similarly equipoised in his consciousness. I will remain within his heart. Here's Prabhupada's purport. Lord Vishnu was very pleased with Maharaj Prithu's good character and behavior and offered him a benediction. The Lord openly says that performing great sacrifices or undergoing the austerities of mystic yoga practice cannot satisfy him. He is pleased only by elevated character and behavior. But these cannot develop unless one becomes a pure devotee of the Lord. Anyone who has developed unalloyed, unflinching devotional service unto the Lord develops his original good qualities, his spirit soul. The spirit soul, as part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has all the good qualities of the Lord. When the spirit soul is contaminated by the material modes of nature, one is considered good or bad with reference to the material qualities. When one is transcendental to all material qualities, all good qualities come out. Yes, yes, the bhakti of Bhagavata Kinchana. These qualities of a devotee, 26 in number, are listed as follows. 1. A devotee is kind to everyone. 2. A devotee does not quarrel with anyone. So these are the qualities that naturally come to a pure devotee, and gradually one should note how much he is or is not developing these qualities. Kind to everyone, not just some people and not others. Does not quarrel with anyone, not that he quarrels with some people and not others. Fixed in the absolute truth. 4. Equal to everyone. That doesn't mean equally nasty to everyone either. He's everyone's well-wisher. 5. Faultless. Charitable. 7. Mild. Gentle, mild. 8. Clean. 9. Simple. simple and straightforward in dealings. 10, benevolent. 11, peaceful. 12, completely attached to Krishna. 13, has no material hankering. 14, meek. 15, steady. 16, self-controlled. 17, does not eat more than required. 18, sane. 19, respectful. These are all very old-fashioned, aren't they? 20, humble. 21, grave. 22, compassionate. 23, friendly. 24, poetic. 25, expert. Very careful and expert in his dealings. 26, silent. Does not speak more than required, not impelled just to talk about any old thing. The Lord is satisfied by development of the transcendental qualities of the living entity and not by artificial performance of sacrifices in mystic yoga. So the qualities must develop. In other words, unless one is fully qualified to become a pure devotee of the Lord, one cannot expect to be liberated from material entanglement. So after Maitreya has explained this, Maitreya Muni is explaining this to Vidura, repeating to Vidura the words that Lord Vishnu, the pleased words of Lord Vishnu to Prithu Maharaj. Maitreya continues saying, "My dear Vidura, in this way, please forgive him." Now, back after, then the Lord instructed Prithu Maharaj. And now in text 18, back to King Indra, who was there with the Lord and heard all this. As King Indra was standing by, he became ashamed of his own activities and fell down before King Prithu to touch his lotus feet. Because he was the one who was actually guilty. The instructions on how to act in a pure way were actually, in one sense, more required for Indra Dev, because Prithu Maharaj was already on that platform. So when Indra was hearing the Lord instruct Prithu Maharaj, he felt very ashamed for what he had done. And he fell down at the lotus feet of Prithu Maharaj with a very humble, repentant heart. But Prithu Maharaj immediately embraced him in great ecstasy and gave up all envy against him for his having stolen the horsemen for the sacrifice. Purport. There are many cases in which a person becomes an offender to the lotus feet of a Vaishnava and later becomes repentant. Here also we find that although the King of Heaven Indra was so powerful that he accompanied Lord Vishnu, he felt himself a great offender for stealing Prithu Maharaja's horse that was meant for sacrifice. An offender at the feet of a Vaishnava is never excused by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are many instances illustrating this fact. Ambarish Maharaj was offended by Durvasa Muni, a great sage and mystic yogi, and Durvasa had also had to fall down at the lotus feet of Ambarish Maharaj. Indra decided to fall down at the lotus feet of King Prithu and beg forgiveness. But the king was so magnanimous a Vaishnava that he did not want Maharaj Indra to fall down at his feet. Instead, King Prithu immediately picked him up and embraced him, and both of them forgot all the past incidents. Both King Indra and Maharaj Prithu were envious and angry with each other. But since both of them were Vaishnavas, or servants of Lord Vishnu, it was their duty to adjust the cause of their envy. This is also a first-class example of cooperative behavior between Vaishnavas. In the present days, however, because people are not Vaishnavas, they fight perpetually amongst one another and are vanquished without finishing the mission of human life. There is a great need to propagate this Krishna consciousness movement in the world so that even though people sometimes become angry and malicious towards one another, because of their being Krishna conscious, such rivalry, competition, envy can be adjusted without difficulty. So a very important instruction to be applied within the society of devotees especially. Otherwise, what will be the preaching? We'll preach and spread it that everyone should be like this. So where must the example be shown? So apply the instructions. This is the real art, the real challenge. King Prithu abundantly worshipped the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who was so merciful to him. While worshipping the lotus feet of the Lord, Prithu Maharaj gradually increased his ecstasy and devotional service. The Lord was just about to leave, but because he was so greatly inclined towards the behavior of King Prithu, he did not depart. Seeing the behavior of Maharaj Prithu with his lotus eyes, he was detained because he is always the well-wisher of his devotees. So the Lord was watching the very pure-hearted behavior of Prithu Maharaj, and he could not leave. He was captivated by the very soft and pleasant, sweet, loving heart of his devotee. So we'll finish today's class by reading Prabhupada's purport to text 20. Here the word saritsatam are very significant. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is always very inclined towards his devotee and is always thinking of his devotee's well-being. This is not partiality. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord is equal to everyone, samoham sarvabhuteshu. But to one who particularly engages in his service, he is very much inclined. In another place, the Lord says that a devotee always exists in his heart, and he also exists always in the heart of the devotee. The special inclination of the Supreme Personality of Godhead for his pure devotee is not unnatural, nor is it partiality. For example, sometimes a father has several children, but he has special affection for one child who is very much inclined toward him. This is explained in the Bhagavad Gita, Tesham Satata Yuktanam, Bhajatam Pratipurvakam, Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam, Yena Mamupayanti Te. Those who constantly engage in the devotional service of the Lord in love and affection are directly in contact with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, sitting as the Supersoul in everyone's heart. Those who are constantly engaged in devotional service of the Lord in love and affection are directly in contact with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, sitting as the Supersoul in everyone's heart. The Lord is not far away from the devotee. He is always present in everyone's heart. But only the devotee can realize the Lord's presence, and thus he is directly connected, and he takes instructions from the Lord at every moment. Therefore, there is no chance of a devotee's being in error, nor is there any partiality on the part of the Lord for his pure devotee. Okay, thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Sure.
Given the Lord's instructions there, just mentioned the devotee's mind becoming broader and transparent.
Yes.
Is transparent referring to in the context of an uncontaminated body?
Yes. As opposed to when we think of the opposite of transparent, what do we think of? What are the words that come to our mind?
Dense.
Huh?
Dense.
Cloudy comes to my mind.
Opaque.
So right now our consciousness is not transparent, because our consciousness, natural, pure consciousness, is love for Krishna. Krishna Nityada. So there are so many coverings, so much contamination, so transparently clear. So the natural consciousness of the soul is exhibited, and that is broad broad loving consciousness, Mahatmanas Tumam Prata Daivim Prakritim Ashita. That's the meaning of Mahatma, liberal or broad minded.
Prabhupada gives many instructions for the king this past time we're hearing the monarchy was sustained political system.
Yes.
In modern day context, could these instructions are meant to be for also democratic leaders, or could we surmise that in the future perhaps monarchy will be coming in vogue?
Well, so much can be said on that, but you can see how people do long for monarchy. They want a heroic leader, powerful and heroic leader that they can look up to, a hero. People long for heroes, and with the absence of a proper king, so many lesser personalities are, the position is vacant, so they take it up, lesser personalities. But people long for that, and because they're because it's a requirement of the psyche, of the consciousness. So if the king isn't there, they'll find someone else to be a hero. So it's natural, but in Kali Yuga, at this particular time, it's very, very rare that you could find someone who is powerful and pure and whose character is strong enough to actually be a king. So whether it's going to happen, whether it's predictive or not, I can't say. I would tend to think that if they're going to be kings, the kingdoms are going to be very small. But I kind of doubt it. But when there is democracy, most of the principles of how to lead, how to rule, are quite applicable. The first one being to protect the citizens. Whether one is a king or a president, the citizens should be protected. And we saw with Pritam Raj, the first duty is that they're fed properly, to make sure that there's enough production of food. And then after that, to make sure everyone's working. So these are principles that are always there. What's not being followed is the religiousness of a pure and religious king. And the methodology of making sure that piety goes on, as opposed to impious activities, and standards for right and wrong behavior. Now there are no standards, so we could scrutinize to see what points are practical in democracy and what points are not practical. But I think, in general principle, the ones that aren't practical to be instated as they were possibly in a different time could be updated to some degree and applied according to the time and place. Good question. Hanji.
Regarding forgiveness?
Yes.
You should forgive. But when we draw the line, who far we keep forgiving, how far we let?
Give you, and you, but you. Well, it's up to us where we draw the line. If we want to remain angry at someone at the time of death and then have to come back again as their enemy, then we can do that. Or say if someone owes us money and we're angry at them and we can make sure they pay us back in the next life or something. Or we can go back to Godhead. But if we have these attachments, anger is the greatest attachment. When you're angry at someone, at least I know this from my own personal experience, you think of someone more continuously than when you love someone. This is also described in the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam. So it is a very powerful meditation, and it will trap you in the material world. So it's in our own interest to be forgiving. Because Bhagavatam also states, Lord Brahma says, Tateno kampam susamikshamano bhunjane vapmakripavapa kam ridvag vipapodam vidatanam namaste jivatiyo mukti pade sadayavak. That if we see everything, say someone does something to us, it means that Krishna has sanctioned it, otherwise it couldn't happen. Because he's the anumanta, he has permitted it. If he said no, if I want to do something and Krishna says no, it can't happen. So that means that Krishna has let it happen. So there is an element of Krishna's mercy in everything. And if we learn how to extract Krishna's mercy from everything that happens to us, even though it seems very, very unfortunate and sad that it happened, then we will have the qualification for going back to Godhead. We will be living only in Krishna's mercy. But this is not easy to do. It's easy to theoretically sit up here and tell others about it, but it's hard. It's very hard. You have to be an affectionate lover of Krishna and have knowledge and control of the mind.
Srila Prabhupada, he was asked this question, and he gave, quite a long explanation. Basically, the conclusion was there is no limit to forgiveness. There's no limit. It's only limited by
our limitations.
It was describing the qualities of Lord Nityananda. And Lord Nityananda said forgiveness, there is no limit.
Wonderful. Amazing consciousness, a forgiving consciousness. And even in the wonderful world of New Age philosophy, I talk so much about forgiveness as being that is what holds the karma within oneself. The anger, the frustrations is held. We hold it ourselves, and in that sense, by not forgiving, we are our own worst enemy, because we're holding what the person did to us within ourselves. So he's continuously doing it again and again and again, you know, every day. He did this to me, he did this to me. So we're torturing ourselves. And when forgiving means letting it go, releasing it. It's a wonderful point. If we had long time, it would be nice to share realizations on this. But it's hard to do. Key.
Lord Krishna gave only 100 chances.
To Sisupal. Okay. And then he cut off his head. So what are you proposing? Well, let me ask you a question. You can give as many chances to others as you want Krishna to give to you. How many do you want Krishna to give to you? You want 100 only, okay? Okay. Then you can give. Then your head comes off.
Our body will go bad. 100
This is in the Sharma Samhita, it is written.
Starting
new 100. Yeah. And then when we're up to 99, anyway, let's start again. What's the problem? some more chances.
As you mentioned, Maharaj, and Prabhupada quoted in Hate the Sin, Not the Sinner. So that hatred is still applied in the, still in the most. If you are still in the bodily concept,
so you're saying you shouldn't hate the modes.
So, and like, hate the sin.
But there's not very much thrill in hating modes of material nature. It's much more exciting to hate people. I mean, you'll get very bored of it. I mean, really, you can't. The point is that our hatred or anger always gets directed at people. As soon as you give that up and think something philosophical, it's gone. If you hate the modes, that means hating Krishna. He is the creator of the modes. Prakriti kriyamanani gunai kamani sarvasya. Maya Dakshena Prakriti. So really you don't hate the modes. The point is, don't hate the person. It's the modes that have caused it, not the person. So the point is, don't direct your anger at the person.
Interesting. The ultimate sin is to turn one's back on Krishna, so if you really hated that sin, then probably turn around.
Yeah, turn around. Why not? Yep.
It just seems sometimes on the practical level that the solutions that are offered to the problems, the solution that's offered is so beyond our means. It's like it's taken in a simple way that one just becomes a pure devotee or associates with essentially intimate friendship or something like that. And yet it's so far removed from where we perhaps find ourselves now. So then how do we adjust? We accept it theoretically, yes, just do this, this will go away. But then when you have to sort of frankly say, but I can't do this, I have no capacity to do this, how do we adjust for the difference between our capacity and the ideal solution that's being offered?
Of course there are many, many things one could say about this. I've thought about this a lot before preparing for class, but I won't answer you with my conclusion. I'll answer you based on what you said. If you're angry at someone and you think I should forgive him and should focus my mind on Krishna and assess the modes, and then you realize I'm on such a low level of consciousness that I can't do that. I'm so poor-hearted, even though I should, and it's the best thing, I can't. So if a little bit of humility sprouts in the heart, you find that you can't be angry at someone when you're in a humble mood. The anger comes from a proud mood. How could they do this to me? Don't they realize it's me, who I am, the center of the universe? Not quite as dramatic as that, but but as soon as some humility enters in the heart, the anger vanishes too. So just to do what you said would solve the problem in a different way than I was thinking, even when I was thinking about this question.
I appreciate that, and I experienced that, but I noticed that 5 minutes later, or 10 minutes later, it appears to be insoluble. So it seems to be that there are moments of release and forgiveness, but they don't seem to always remain consistently present.
Right. So the point you're asking about is, how does one become consistent? So if one is asking, how can one become consistent without advancing, sort of stay the same and yet become consistent? I'll answer it the same way I just answered it. That if you realize that I should be consistent, when I'm not, then humility comes again. So if we have no other consistent quality, if we can just be consistently humble, probably all the problems will be solved. But the problem is that's hard to do. So then the question is, what do you do if you can't be what you want to be, and you can't even, and you're proud about it? So what can we do? We try our best to follow the process. We hear about it. If we don't hear about what the ideal is, and the hearing itself is powerful, that brings us to the ideal. The hearing itself is part of the process, and the chanting is part of the process, and the association of devotees is part of the process, and desiring Hari Bol Maharaj. And the desiring is part of the process. So if one takes the point that it's so far away, I don't even want to be it, then one misses out on the fact that our existence is based on our desires. So by desiring properly, we end up going in a proper direction, either today or tomorrow. But if we take an improper desire due to the fact that we're not qualified to have to achieve the proper desire, if we say, for example, that due to the fact that I can't be pure, I might as well be impure, and I'm going to just desire that, then we'll go in that direction. We'll take a wrong turn. So it's better to keep the ideal, even if we can't achieve it, as ideal and as what I want, and feel humble, than to turn from the ideal and feel good about ourselves and act horribly. So we should keep the ideal. That's one of the glories of hearing the Bhagavatam. It presents us with so many ideal characters that we can strive to be like heroes, true heroes. But then again, we also at the same time need to deal with people who are near the same level as we are, who face similar problems and challenges that we do, that can help us in a practical way with how they've dealt with similar, how they're dealing and have dealt with similar problems. That's culture, that's society, that's community. Being alone is difficult. If we're alone, it's very difficult. But if we have others to take help from, it becomes so much easier. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Prithviraj ki jai, Maharajan ji ki jai.